Hello and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. I am your host, Lebubule. The Stretch Podcast is a space where I share my thoughts on matters of personal transformation, emotional well-being, and spiritual growth. My teachings are largely based on what I've learned over the years, what I've read, what I've observed, and my very own personal experiences. The podcast is also a space where I have conversations with people whose work and life experiences has inspired me and helped me grow tremendously. People who are not only experts in their fields, but have open hearts, generous spirits, and they are teachers in their own rights. People who I call perpetual students of life. Here's another episode of the Stretch Podcast.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast, a listening experience for self-improvers and stretchers looking to master life.
Hey, hey, dumelang, my friends. It is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today I have a brilliant mind. Oh my God, Bongani Michael, you are going to just fall in love with his brain. You are going to love this conversation. And as usual, I will introduce him properly in the second segment of the intro. Today, what do I want to say? And I really want to keep this intro not too long. I want to say that it is a Friday as I'm doing this intro, and for the first time since I returned from Joburg. And I returned in Joburg on Monday, mind you. But for the first time since I returned from Joburg, I am starting to feel like myself again. I was beyond exhausted. And it's my fault, really. I cannot blame anyone. It's my fault. When I was in Joburg, I think I overexerted myself. I did too much, too soon. You know, there's this thing that where you think you can just pack up your day, forgetting that in that day there's travel. It's not the Karoo where you walk everywhere and where everything is in a 10-kilometer radius. In Joburg, you have to travel. You have to get in a car and go somewhere. And there's energies and forces and there's things and it's a lot going on. So I packed up my days so intensely that by the time I got onto the plane on Monday, I felt like I was hit by a bus. On Tuesday morning, and I had a class to do and I couldn't postpone. It was bad. It was bad. And another thing that I did, and I wonder if someone can relate to this, you know, another thing that I did, which it goes against my body and my spirit. I hope someone can identify with this or can relate. I have the type of body or the type of spirit that whenever it gets to a new place, no matter how comfortable the place is, I will not sleep well or sleep at all the first night. I will not eat. My appetite will just go. And I will not go to the bathroom. Nothing. So I'm like a zombie. And someone told me, one of my teachers told me that it's because we have the types of spirit that likes to root. I have a spirit that likes to scan a place. Imagine. And it wants to know if it can put its roots there. I need to root. And yeah, I think I spoke about this before when I still used to do my solo podcast, solo episodes. So imagine this then, with someone with a spirit or a body like mine that needs to root first before it can relax and then, you know, other bodily functions start working, including proper sleep. Now imagine putting it through 3 different homes. Because what I did is I went to Joburg and I agreed to be hosted by my friends. And I'm so grateful because of their generosity and kindness and really just opening their homes for me. One of them is Tseho. Shout out to you, Tseho. I know you are probably mortified wherever you are because you are so private. But yeah, I'm mentioning you and thank you for your home. Tseho hosted me in her beautiful home in Hyde Park for 2 nights. And then Saneta, shout out to you, Saneta, hosted me for 1 night in her beautiful home in Pretoria East. You know, Bomenlen, Moreleta Park, those types. Moreleta Park area and further than, yeah, thereabouts. Beautiful, beautiful homes. And then the last 2 nights I spent them at my sister's in Kempton Park. Now, over and above having a body like that, over and above putting it through different homes, when you are hosted by a friend, you are not going to say, yeah, good night, thank you, good night at 9. Nah, guys, we spoke until about my 2 a.m., maybe even 3 a.m. And the next day, mind you, I have meetings back to back. So two nights at Tsekho, sleeping just after 2 a.m. on both nights. Then getting onto the Gautrain, going to Pretoria East and speaking with Saneta until around 1 a.m., 2 a.m. And the next day I have a whole day Fall Peak Board meeting. By the time I got to my sister's after the Fall Peak Board meeting on Saturday evening, I was incoherent. I was like a zombie. My sister didn't understand what I'm saying about what, because I was that brain fried. And by even when she sent me to bed, because she sent me to bed around 10, and she said, Zamaya, you don't look okay and you don't sound okay. Even though she sent me at 10, I couldn't sleep because, you know, there's a surge of adrenaline and that irritation. And I now understand why children, especially toddlers and babies, would fiddle and fuss and wrestle and fight when all they need to do is sleep. It's because I don't know what happens. I think overstimulation, because I was overstimulated. Overstimulation kicks in and you can't actually rest. The only time, honestly, that I feel like, okay, I think I rested was last night. Honestly, last night, Thursday night. So I will never do that again. I know people love me and I love them too. And people love to host me. And I would do anything to just, you know, be in someone's space and listen to their stories. But I will never, ever do that again. When I'm in Joburg, I'll be stationed in one space. And I will not pack my days like I did. So yeah. That's a little story from me. Quick promos. We are unfortunately not going to be taking new Stretch School members for the class of 2021 in the Facebook group. So if you've wanted to register and join the Facebook group, you can join the Facebook group. You would have to do your own solo work, which means you're going to have to wait for the time I announce that the first module, the first January module is ready. We're still setting up the online school. We had started, but we decided to redo it because we are thinking bigger and globally and all that. So we're redoing it. So you just have to stay tuned. For an example, those of you, and there are many of you, who were just interested in one subject. You were interested in archetypes only, or universal laws only, or shadow works only. Then you'll just have to wait until we announce that a program is ready. But we cannot add you in the Facebook group yet now, because, you know, it's late and there's a ton of content already. And the students are now marinating together. They now know each other. And it's just warm. We don't want extra people, because each person you add in a group that's established changes the energy. I know these things, changes the energy dynamic. So I'm not one of those people that keep adding new people in the same group. I it just doesn't work for me. Okay, so you can't join Stretch School for 2021 Facebook. You can take only individual lessons from the school podcast, from the school website when we announce that it's ready. All right, so that's one. Secondly, the retreat. We have a retreat happening in Botswana in May. Very few spots left. If you've always just wanted to join my retreats, we do have some very, very few spots left, because we don't want to take more than 12 delegates, but there's still a bit of room. info@lebopule.co.za, we will send you details there. Stretch Masterclass for 2021 resumes in March, but Stretch Masterclass is strictly for anyone who has been part of Stretch. If you've been part of Stretch 2017, 2018, 19, 20, you can join Masterclass. It is not for new people. I repeat, it is not for anyone who's never done my program. You are going to drown, because there's concepts that only stretchers understand and know. And basically, we are just continuing and just deepening. So we don't want to drown you. So if you want to be part of my programs, let's start Kosap A, the 7-month program. Whether you do it on your own or you join us in the group, it's fine. you just have to be part of the Stretch School first before you can do any of my master programs. 3 books. Thank you so much. We are getting nice sales going. I really appreciate. I really, really do. I really, really do, because you are restoring my faith. You are restoring my faith in Blacks don't read. Blacks don't buy books. Yeah, no, you are showing me my mother, and I really appreciate that. Thank you so much. Keep it coming. And yeah, that's it. I think that's it. And I think I try to speak as fast as I can so that I don't pass the 10-minute mark in my first intro. With that said, let's take a little break, and then I will introduce you to Ntate Bongani Michael.
Who should join Stretch School? Anyone who is curious about how life works at a spiritual level and how it affects us daily. Anyone interested in the link between your spiritual self and human self. It is also for anyone battling with things such as bad temper, anger, bitterness, jealousy, money problems, and relationship dramas. Anyone who is tired of masks, pretenses, and mediocrity. Anyone who yearns to live a more authentic and more powerful life. If you feel like you are living a double life, then Stretch is for you. For more details, go to www.stretchschool.co.za.
All right, let me now introduce you to Bongani Michael, who is a friend, a confidant, a comrade, a colleague, someone that I am truly, truly fond of. I mean, he's one of the, I think it's not the few men, I think he's the only other man. He's the only other man that every time we conclude our conversations, whether it's on text or on the phone, he says, I love you. Okay, so I'm laughing hard because Plus One likes to say, So Bongani is that close of a friend, but more than a friend, Bongani is a brilliant, brilliant mind. Someone that I bounce a lot of things off, and someone that, unbeknown to a lot of people, he was the brains really behind me creating Stretch School. He was the brains behind where Stretch and everything else that I'm trying to create is it. I remember many years ago, 2017, when I was starting Stretch, and he came up with a document and a manifesto of what Stretch School must be about. And he had things like newsletter, podcast, all the things that I currently have, where Bongani Michael's brainchild. And for the entire 2017, he had held my hand. But because he's also a man in his own path and doing his own things, by 2020, he was just really doing his own thing. And he established a group or a movement called Black Love, which is, you know, the topic of the day, Black Love and Black Men. And, you know, we met on Facebook. I've even forgotten that we met on Facebook, because we have become such close friends, such that we are almost family. He is doing some stuff with Plus One here, some business things that I know nothing about, and I do mention it in our opening remarks in the conversation that, yeah, you and Plus One are busy with something that no one is telling me about. And why he's on the podcast, honestly, I just felt that there is no better person that I can talk to about Black men and Black love. Well, there are other people, but I think because he has written a book with the same title, Black Love, and over the years and the conversations that we've had, I know where his heart is at. I know where his heart is at around issues of Black love and Black men and Black women. I mean, one of the things that Bongani Michael wants to see happen is the bridging of the gap between Black men and Black women, and to end the war. Because whether we know it or not, there's a subtle war happening between Black men and Black women. If you look at other nations, other races, you would find that, yes, I mean, they're not perfect. We're not saying they're perfect, certainly not. But there is an almost glaring division between Black men and Black women. And I know Bongani is one of those people that wants to find a way of bridging that gap. Now, I want to read a little bit about of his bio. You can see it on the show notes there. I just want to start. Maybe let me read the last part, the second paragraph. His devotion towards Black emancipation and prosperity has led him to author Black Love, Poverty, Pain, and Sorrow, a book that looks into socioeconomic factors to better understand how Black men and Black women relate. True to his pro-Black ideals, he champions on a daily basis economic redress through his intermediary enterprise, Bankability, that assists SMMEs with capital raising and market access. In the conversation, I mean, we cover quite a lot of things. We cover how Black boys and Black girls are raised separately, which then gets more amplified as we grow older, that separation gets even bigger, the economic factors between men and women, the idea of provision as a man showing love, how that should change, how men's main issue, Black men's main problem is lack of spiritual identification, and he's not referring to religion. The conversation is highly intellectual, philosophical, psychological, political, and yeah, social. It's deep, it's broad, it's got depth, and it's got breadth, and it's also funny. And I think you will find it extremely enriching. It's a gift of a conversation. Now, before I give you Bongani, let me just warn you, or is it a warning? I don't know. Bongani's audio, the volume is not so great. He's audible and everything, but the volume is not the best. So there's almost a mismatch between my intervention and his tone. So it's like, you know, volume low. But we tried our very best to make it audible or to make it less noticeable. But just in case you are one of those people who have sound engineering ears, yeah, that's that. And I'm only mentioning it because you may not miss it. So yeah, that's the only glitch. But otherwise, the conversation is incredible, and may it bless you. May it give you a different perspective. May it stretch you a little bit. There is a bit of controversy there. We do get a little controversial and a bit radical. But hey, this is the Stretch Podcast. That's why we named it that. May you enjoy, and I give you Bongani Michael.
Welcome to the Stretch Podcast.
I mean, you know, I'm saying I'm hitting record, and I've hit record. Hello, Bongani Michael. Welcome to the Stretch Podcast. Finally, again, one of those that I knew I will have. Remember, we had one episode many years ago, and it was weird, and the sound was bad, and it was bad. So I thought, no, I mean, for someone who has a brilliant mind like you, you do deserve a proper studio podcast. Mm. So hello, and welcome back.
Hello, Lebo. It's a pleasure to be back on your platform. And I truly enjoy your platform. I mean, all your platforms, whether it's online, whether it's social media, Facebook, Stretch, or your personal wall. Really always enjoyed the platforms, and I think it has built me so much.
And, yeah, I know.
Quite a lot that I've gained through your platform. So yeah, it's always a pleasure to engage with you. And like I said to you one time, that I always had the opinion that each and every conversation that I have with you should be recorded, because so much gets to be said.
You know? No, it's true. It's true. I also feel the same way, that you are such a brilliant mind that every time we have our calls, which is not often enough, we need to improve, by the way, they should just be recorded. People must just hear us talk. Because I think you drop a lot of bars and I receive them well, and vice versa. I think, and that's what I'm hoping this conversation is going to be. It's going to bless people. And show us a different perspective of love and Black love and loving, and also maybe educate us, excuse me, a little about Black History Month, as we, I mean, at the end of it, and why is it so significant, why we should adhere to such things, not only Valentine's, you know,
because February is also Valentine's. Yeah. But before we do that, how are you? How have you entered the year 2021? And how are you feeling about everything, you know, based on last year?
Look, I think last year was two opposites, you know. It started off quite well. And then I think even within the middle of COVID itself, it went well business-wise, because we also ventured into the space of COVID supplies as well, providing solutions for companies, sourcing out stock. So I actually got quite busy during COVID with the group that I was with here in Cape Town. You know? So it started off really well. But then again, it dipped at the end because I left the group. For one, I went to be independent again, and then as I was excited about that in terms of finally having to establish something that is going to have a name besides me being Bongani Michael, you know, I opened up what is called Bankability. So that was quite exciting for me. But then again, I lost my father in December, but it's not due to COVID, you know. But unfortunately I lost it, and one would have thought one had survived the year 2020, but then when something like that happens at the end, then you're like, wow, really, it hits us all, you know. It really hits us all. So I think it has been those two halves in terms of 2020.
I did hear about your father and also Bankability, because Plus One keeps talking about it. So there's something you're doing with him. I still don't know why. It's because he always says, "Mangeni daba zama tota," and I'm like, "Bongani is my friend. Bongani is my friend first." Daba zama tota.
Okay,
right. Yeah. Anywho, but it was a strange year, and how are you feeling about the whole polarity on vaccine, to vaccinate or not to vaccinate? Before you answer, let me tell you, Mina, I am kind of over the people who are against vaccination, not because I am for it, if I'm making any sense. I'm just over the drama, but not necessarily that I am for it. I am just in a space where I'm shook. I don't know. I don't know what you think. And I have not given myself time and space to really think about this. Where are you at with that?
Look, I did not want to get into too much in terms of the politics of vaccination, you know. But I do think it's important that we really consider that element as a solution, even if it's temporary, you know. I think most of the problem that people have is that most of these drugs are being tested in Africa. And that is quite unfortunate. But I think for once, the one thing that I'm saying that about COVID is that for once we have something that's really affecting the whole world. So it's not really just affecting Africa like Ebola. You know?
Yeah.
So for once we can actually participate in any vaccine program, because it's affecting the entire globe, because they cannot produce something in England that's only going to kill Africans or leave us in bad health state.
So
I think we should be open to that in terms of that the repercussions are quite drastic in terms of everything being closed. I mean, we're already poor, so we're already unemployed, we're already not having assets. We already marginalized, so why do we also allow a continued lockdown? You know, so we cannot. Let's allow the vaccination process to happen so that things can ease up, so that a lot of people can actually continue with their day-to-day, go back to work, go back to school, and live our lives and socialize. So I think the good thing is that even the president has said that it's open to anyone. And anyone has a choice to say you want it or you don't want it. But the greater positive about it is that let those who want to take part of the vaccination program take part in it. And it's going to better the infection rate and everything else in society so that we can get back to normal. I mean, we cannot really allow for for rumors around the fact that it's meant to track and trace us and all those things.
I know. Look, I agree. It is one of those a hard place and a, what do they call it? Between a hard place and a rock. So yeah. There isn't much choice and there isn't much wiggle movement. So yeah, I see. I hear what you say. Now let's talk about Black men, Black History Month, and Black love. And I'm going to let you sort of lead this because I don't know where you want to start. We've been sort of talking about this on WhatsApp back and forth, you and I. And it's a big topic. It's a broad topic. And I want us to take it easy and, you know, take it nice and slow because it is that important. My interest is, ever since George Floyd, I have been more, I've just developed a more sensitivity or empathy with Black men across the globe, not just Americans and us here. There's a new sympathy that has developed, or an elevated sympathy that, you know, in as much as there's other issues that Black men bring to us as Black women, which we can talk about if you want. But the Black man is literally on his own, if you know what I'm trying to say. Black man, you are on your own, like literally for real. And I got it properly for the first time after the George Floyd incident. So that's my opening shots. And I want to just hear where you want to start with this.
I think it's true that we are on our own, you know? And the modernization of the civil society and how we live in the communities as well, it's all the signs are showing that it's leaning more towards everyone being for themselves, you know? So now you get to a point whereby you have an entire race or gender that has been really marginalized and never got to a point whereby they could define things for themselves and dictate terms for themselves. And now that they have that opportunity, we find that circumstances has changed drastically. A lot more things are being privatized. A lot more things are being regulated. A lot more people are gaining liberty and are gaining their freedoms in terms of education, in terms of employment, in terms of business. And what this means is that we end up having to live a life whereby it's only you and your family, you know? So the whole communal structure and the whole communal way of doing things is not there anymore. So with that being absent, you find that everyone else now is staying in a gated estate. Everyone else is staying in their own house in that estate. You don't know the neighbors. So we even the Black family itself, we are on our own. Each family for itself, you know. So we're coming from a background whereby we used to do things communally.
Yeah.
And now there's this swift detachment from that in terms of even each and every family now for their own. Now you're responsible for your own security. You're responsible for your own resources. You're responsible for your own education. I mean, they've just announced now that NSFAS is going to cut the funding of nurses. I mean, now how do you get to that point whereby you're cutting that funding? So you're meaning that those have to now find ways of funding themselves, and it is quite too soon for you to reach those conclusions that everyone can fund themselves in that regard. So and then you have something that we've always been noting, a society whereby Black women are being lifted and Black women are being given education and they're becoming more and more independent. But now the biggest problem is that we are not aligning that independence so that it works for the family structure. We are aligning that independence so that it works for the Black woman for herself, you know? So we're not finding any ways how we can actually align this independence. In fact, whereby we talk about the fact that there's masculine and there's feminine. The two are supposed to work for each other. Men and male are supposed to work for each other. But now you find that it's both are contradicting themselves because we've gotten to a point whereby the Black woman is so liberated and educated that she feels that the Black man is only going to drag him behind because he's still a cultural person, he's still a traditional person, And the funny thing then is that this, the Black woman is seeing the Black man as someone who is very traditional, right? Meaning backwards in that regard. But then again, we'd find that the Black man sees the Black woman as someone who's very religious, anchored in religion, you know? And the Black man finds that to be backwards. So can you see that there's always these clashes, And even in the book that I wrote, I always said that the biggest reason that we have that is that our society in its entirety is built upon a framework where the young Black child who is male or a boy is separated from the girl. And everywhere else they are, there's that separation. So no one gets to understand how the other is. You know, so the young Black girl does not know anything about the Black boy because they're always separations and assumptions and perceptions all the time.
I wanted to say, can you speak more about the separation? I really like where you are going with this. Because there was just a light bulb moment when you mentioned it, that the Black boy and the Black girl, there's always the separate. We really just don't know each other. So I want you to talk to it a bit and then just to see if that's where you're going. And then I'll bring a question. I'll take you back to something you said earlier about the Black men and the Black woman. Where is the separation and how does it manifest?
So you look at how they grow up, right? The young Black boy is always told not to play with girls. And the young Black girl is also told not to play with girls, right? So at school as well, you find that the girls are on their own, the boys are on their own. Then you even go to church, you find that the separation in the church structures is also the boys this side, girls that side. Then you go into sport, the separation is still there, boys this side, girls that side. And as you grow older in society, and everywhere you go, at work even, the women are on this side, the men are on that side. You go to traditional ceremonies as well. There's a separation there as well. Women this side, men that side. So now you find that your entire life as you've been growing up, you've always been separated. But then now when you are 25 years old, you are expected to marry this person and live with this person that you've never actually got to know. And you don't have a clue about who they are and their interests, how they think and how they behave. And you know, you don't have a single clue. And hence you would find that there's always that question about how do Black men learn?
Yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. Before we go there, I just want to push you a bit, or rather stretch you a little bit. The separation you speak of, it's exactly what I thought you'd go to. But is it unique to Black people? Is it unique to Black? Because I think it happens across cultures where we are separated. Or do you know of something I don't know?
Look, it does happen across cultures, you know. But I think from our side, it gets to the point whereby it's entrenched within how men are, you know? And also it's entrenched in a way whereby it's almost like women are the opposition. Can you get that? So women directly become the opposition. So now that's where the big difference is, you know? And then the other thing is that if you look at our societies and how they're constructed, even if you would have those barriers, or if you would have those soft, subtle rules that boys are boys and they must be on their own, but because of our living spaces and our living arrangements, it doesn't even allow for that small time whereby they can actually interact and mingle. Whereas you would find that I'll make it an example that if you are in the suburb somewhere, you find that the fathers are business owners, right? Equally so, the mothers are executives. From most time of the day, they are not there. Yeah. The father is not there, the mother is not there. So the children can interact. So they find those spaces whereby they can actually interact. And you find that also within the other races, they become adults much more sooner than what you have with the Africans. For example, when he leaves home and he goes to university, immediately he has his own two-bedroom apartment. So can you see the family structure is already there?
It's already set up,
He can spend much more time with women, you know, in his own space to get to understand them. Whereas on the other side, we don't have that luxury of having that privacy whereby we can interact with women and get to understand them, because we're always living on borrowed time, you know, because we just have a few minutes. Never have your own privacy. Privacy is not there for you to actually get to that point. But then also that the stigmatization around that as well, you know. So we stigmatize a lot of things, you know. It's the same thing as I'm also thinking now, if we speak about love between Black men themselves, there's now this stigmatization in terms of homophobia and all that. So how are men going to learn to love each other when there's this thing now that's called homophobia? So now you find that most men are like, ish, I can't even go there because I'm going to be a gay or a homosexual or something like that. So now you've got to talk to me about how do Black men love other Black men. So now immediately you have this other problem of Kutiba. Now a lot of Black men are going to fear even having to show affection to another brother because of the fact that they will be branded as some form of other alternate sex.
You know, just before you continue, I want to also add a little bit just to support your case that the whole division and separation is almost emphasized in Black people, and such that we are weaponized against each other. It's that idea of having a boy as a friend. You read my book, right? You read my first book, and I was that girl that was very from a young age. Yeah, I would hang with both genders. I would hang with boys, and my best friend was my cousin Tabu, followed by my other friend Jabu, who turned out to be homosexual. From that young age, we knew, and I was terrorized for that. I used to be bullied just for why do you want to be amongst boys? And there was a song that they used to sing for me, a derogatory song with Simbo neva fazin, Simbo neva doten. And I was just 11. And I'm just an 11-year-old. And even now with progress, and I see my little boy Tau, he's 13, the idea of him being best friends with a girl, is he can take it, but you can see there's something there's it's not comfortable. While when you look at white people, well, through pop culture and obviously what we watch on TV, it's a natural thing to have a boy as a best friend. So yeah, I hear you. How do Black men love with all that drama?
this is a question that I also posed. I think it was back in 2017. You know, what is our relationship with love? How do we define it? You know, have we ever defined it? You know, how do we express it? You know, and that's why I was saying to you that you find that most of the time there's always that question, which about do you love me? You know, she's not sure if this man loves her because of the fact that there are things that maybe he's not doing to express which about he does actually love her, you know. So I think it then takes us back to what are the actions in a relationship, you know? and what does he do? How does he behave? You know?
Yes.
I remember the fact that we are beings who express mass, right?
Mm.
So we express ourselves mass, and for the longest time, expression has been seen as something that is feminine. So hence, anything that has to do with expressing your devotion to the one that is in your life had to do with what you can do in terms of provision. So provision has been how we have expressed now, by providing. You know? Can you provide a home for her? Can you provide food for her? Can you provide for her kids? Can you provide for her family? You know, so it has always been around provision. So it has actually been easy in that way, that the only thing he has to do is to make sure that she has a house, she has food, the kids are dressed, they can go to school. And basically that would be it in terms of him showing his commitment towards her, you know. And then I would think then the other one would go to, when we speak about the connection or the intimate connection between them, he would show that he loves her by not cheating her, you know.
Or by not finding out that he's cheating on her.
Exactly. It has been that easy, you know. So now you have to look at the fact that we live in a world whereby we've integrated with the West. So hence, I speak about the ideal of love and the reality of love. So what we've known love to be, which is providing, that is the reality of provide. Right? So now what we are battling with now is the ideal of love. What is that ideal? What is that thing that she craves for and she can actually show her that he loves her? Right? So now we're moving on to romance.
Yeah.
How romantic is it? So how romantic is he? So what does he do? You know, does he participate in February when it comes to Valentine's? Does he give her a call? Does he SMS her? Does he buy roses for her? Does he book out the restaurant and all those things, you know? But I think it's very fundamental that we need to understand first how things have been done, you know, in terms of
it's
been based on provision.
Right. And okay, can I interject today a bit on provision? And I want to take you slightly back to where we started. So this idea of provision, for me it's quite big, and I want us to interrogate it deeply because we are living in a changing world. And you sort of mentioned it earlier when you said society or the system or whatever it is that we refer to has deliberately empowered women, Black women in particular. There is an ongoing program and project of empowering and uplifting Black women for obvious reasons. I mean, for both race and gender reasons. And there is absolutely nothing wrong with that. Black women have gone through probably the most, if you were to compare the entire hierarchy from a white man down to her, right? However, that then becomes a problem when the Black man does not get the same empowerment, if you know what I mean, because he doesn't.
Yeah.
So it's almost like the woman is moving, and I'm not speaking of concepts here. I'm speaking of things I know personally, based on my circles, based on my clients, based on my students.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, the women are economically and socially at a better standing. And just to give you a basic example without mentioning names, I was in Joburg last week and I was hosted by students of mine who have turned into friends, you know, because, you know, we missed you. It's been COVID. We haven't seen you. So if you come to Joburg, please don't go to a hotel. Let's host you. These are two single women. One is recently divorced. One has been single. Beautiful homes. Pretoria East, one in the middle of Sandton. You'll hardly ever find that equivalent in a guy. If you find a guy with that kind of resource, he's likely to be married. Am I making any sense? So the man who has that kind of standing as the two women I'm giving you an example of is either freshly divorced and will be married soon, because for some reason a man can't be alone, and then the women are just going along and they're fine and they have an independence that I'm not sure if it's healthy. I just don't want to get in trouble. It's an independence that is beautiful to see. Yeah. I just don't know to what end. Where are we going with this? Yeah, so anyway, you can respond to that. I mean, it's almost as if this is my interview. You can respond to this. I'm going to mute myself.
Okay. No, I think, look, it's that is the trend that's out there. And I think what we need to do as well is there needs to be education on both sides of the sections of society, you know. There needs to be a constant education around the fact that I think black men for the longest time have built black women, you know. And they've sent them to university. And all that, you know. You find that there were black men who were not educated but had resources who could educate a black woman, you know. There were black men who could be business people. They could walk to a ShopRite and fall in love with a teller. And they would take that teller and send that teller to school, and then she becomes something. I think there's we need to get to that point whereby we realize that today nothing is reserved for men only. So there's no job security for men, 100%. And so that means then, to a certain extent, women should also realize the fact that they have also have to play that role of empowering men as well, you know? It's no longer about a woman finding a man that is at a bigger stage than her, you know? I mean, you're already the CEO of a company, so you cannot really find a bigger man than that, because you find that any other man that's a CEO is already married.
Oh, definitely. So very married.
It's obvious that whatever you need to find, you would have to actually go down a bit.
Oh my God, Bongani.
You know? But then
so
again,
we are stuck.
Is because of the fact that black men themselves now are in protest, you know? And they are in protest because they can see where they are at, and they are not allowing themselves to get to that point of allowing themselves to be developed by a black woman who is in a power position. So that protest. So it's a standoff, you know, which my eyes I'm full. Not embracing you, so there's that standoff, and which is quite terrible, you know. It's tragic because at the end of the day, she ends up alone, she ends up single, and at the end of the day, he's struggling, you know. So can I tell you something that I did around 2017?
Yeah, tell me.
So there was a young man in his was about 25, 26. So the young man, he's in IT, he's got a good job. You know how they get paid quite a lot in this IT thing. He's got a good job. But however, due to alcohol and friends, and he was wasting a lot of money.
Yeah.
And he was constantly in debt. And he would come to me and say, "Hey, problems, my life is messed up because I'm always in debt and I'm never coping, I'm earning a lot of money. And my life is just messed up." So I said to him, "Look, the only way you can fix this is if you get yourself a woman."
You know? I knew you were going to say that. I just could tell with your love.
I said to him, "The only way you're going to fix this, get yourself a woman." and then you're going to see everything will be okay. I can tell you now, since that time that I told him to get a woman, he got married within a year. He had a daughter. And I think last month he actually updated me, and he has had a good life since then, you know. No stress about money anymore and none of that. He bought a house in Centurion and all. And last month he updates me finally that he even got a farm, and he got that farm through a business plan that I did for him. So the tragedy in this is that what we are not learning from what other races have done is that the family unit is very important.
Yes.
It is crucial that we maintain a family unit as always.
And
it's the only way we're going to survive, you know, and it's the only way that's going to allow ourselves to build. Because if you're not coping yourself, you're not going to build society. Because you always deal with your own problems first. So what we've done is that we've neglected the power of the family unit. So my white Afrikaner former boss, you know what he did? When his son got a girlfriend, he told his son that you're not going to be going up and down with this young lady. You're getting married within 6 months. If you don't have a place to stay, I'll organize a place to stay, but you're not going to be going up and down with this young girl. You're going to be serious about it. If you're not serious about her, then bring me one that you're serious about. So the family unit is that important. And we need to just be able to maintain that. And I also make the example that you'd find that as soon as a Black woman is earning six figures, she suddenly does not need a man, you know?
I'm glad you went back there, because I wanted to go back there.
Okay. And I would ask the simple question, where have you seen a white lady who earns six figures who does not need a man? So even if she earns 10 million, she's still going to have a husband, you know? And it has never been that she's earning now 10 million, now she does not need a man. No. So we've completely destroyed the family structure in that regard, whereby we think the financial independence means that you don't depend on a man. We should not be seeing them as men. We should be seeing them as part of the family structure that your kids are also going to need as they're growing up.
But you know what, Bongani, let's stretch a little further. Because I'm a woman, right? And I'm a woman that I know, should anything happen between me and Wongs, I'm more likely to be single, and it might just be a choice. With obviously Nina, you'll come when I with benefits. I'm kidding. But the point I'm trying to make is it's not my understanding. When I think about these things deeply, it's not so much that the guy does not earn six figures or that he earns less than me that is a problem. The problem is the baggage behind all that. And you mentioned it in passing, Wuthi, men themselves, Black men themselves, are not teachable. You didn't use that word, but I think that's what you implied. Are not teachable, are not humble and willing to say, you know what, I am not at your level financially and economically, but I am here and I can. There are things I can provide. What do you need? Rather, all he does is just some weird power struggle. That is emotionally very taxing and psychologically very destructive. And that's why, as a Black woman, I would opt to be on my own and get sexual satisfaction whenever I need. Because then we will bring it down to that. We will bring it down to that mundane level of sexual satisfaction because I've got my kids, I got my house, I got my car. I don't need anything. I have my friends. And so we need to find a way of solving that, and a Black woman can't do it alone.
Yeah. No, very, very true in terms of you obviously everyone wants to preserve their own emotional position in terms of you cannot expose yourself to hurt each and every time, you know, when you get into a relationship. And it does get tiring, you know, because you do commit, and when you actually commit, then this person does not come to the party. So I think that there's something that needs to happen with regards to how men behave, you know, and how they learn. And the one thing that I can say is that men learn from each other the most than they learn from anyone else.
They learn from each other.
Yes, more than they learn from anything else, more than they learn from school, more than they learn from the workplace. They learn the most from each other. So if you find that there's a group of friends, there's five guys, if three of them gets married, chances are the other two will also get married, you know?
I've actually seen that, yeah. Mm.
Yes, because they are more likely to learn from each other. It's how also the feminists say that men are more scared of men, because it takes the men for if something happens, you know, chances are that they are not going to listen to anyone else but another man that's going to speak about that. And that means that if we are to change things, it needs to be the man that's going to actually teach each other, but also not in the form of conferences, classrooms, but by actual behavior, you know, in terms of who are the guys that are doing the things that are right, and can we have more of a focus on those things that they are doing right, you know? The more we have people are doing the right thing, the more they are also going to learn how to do the right thing. But then again, let me also say sometimes that when it comes to a debate or to a topic in society, there are always people who think that they need to say something. They need to also raise a point, because they've also got an opinion. So where I'm going at, Lebo, is the fact that I think maybe Black men should understand that maybe this is the time that they should not be having an opinion, you know? Maybe this is the time whereby they should actually stand back. Maybe this is the time that they should not be fighting anything, you know? Protesting against the liberation of the Black woman or the advancement of the Black woman, you know. Maybe this is a time whereby if we understand Miss Universe, Susan Zbini, when she says Black woman needs to take up space.
Yeah.
Maybe this is a time where we can say, if Black women are taking up space, then it means that Black men should actually step back a bit. You know? Stop fighting. Stop trying to challenge. Stop trying to put your two cents in there. Step back. If she feels she's ready to lead society, let her lead. So let her lead. Let her control things. Let her take charge, so that you can work on yourself now. And then maybe you'd be able to have a broader view of what's happening. Maybe if she's ahead of you, you'll be able to understand her more. And then you'll see where she's good and where she's bad at. So what do I mean when I'm saying that the Black man should actually step back? I'm saying actually, maybe the Black man's position now is in the kitchen in terms of try to focus more on the domestic issues in terms of your family life. Try to focus more on your kids. Try to focus more on your paternal and your maternal sides of the family, you know. Maybe that have less to do in terms of leadership. And if you can take a step back, you know, in that regard, maybe you'll have time to reflect and you have time to connect with the next element in terms of what the Black man needs, which is spirituality, but not in the religious sense.
Of course, not in the religious sense.
In the religious sense. So the lack in spirituality is actually what is needed more than what people are saying, that Black men should be more emotional. It has nothing to do with emotions. They shouldn't become more emotional. What we actually need is for him to be in touch with his spiritual nature. You know, how that is powerful is the fact that the more and more society advances, the more we become empowered through technology, education. That has not meant society has now gotten better men, you know, overall. So when the minister said an educated man won't rape, there was an outcry, you know, because the outcry is the fact that an educated man does rape, because he lacks that spiritual element that would give him the conscience not to rape.
I need to take a breath. Okay, continue, then I'll take a breath again.
Okay, so he lacks that spiritual element that would actually now anchor him on as a being that cares about humanity, you know? Hence, even if you give him education, even if you give him money, but he will still kill someone. So does that guy who pays someone 80,000 rand to kill his wife? But had that person really been in touch with his own spirituality and becoming a spiritual being as he's supposed to be, then we would be talking about something else. So how then do we look at the fact that, let's forget about replacing or trying to make the Black man emotional. Let's see how we can infuse some spirituality, some deep spirituality in him, so that he can be in touch with his own
with humanity.
His own humanity. And that's actually what we need. So to achieve the greater good in society and to make him less of a violent man, let's see how we can invoke some spirituality back into him. Let's see how we can pump that into him. You know how Steve Biko says that to pump life into a Black man is through giving him Black consciousness. Now, consciousness is that step before spirituality, because you have to become conscious before you can be spiritual.
Wow, Bongani, I need you. Yeah, you've dropped such serious bars, and I just want to reflect on what you've said. You mentioned something so profound that perhaps it's time for the Black men to actually literally take the step back, like literally for real, both literally as in physically and spiritually. Yeah. And I don't know if you were still at Stretch when I was teaching on masculinity and femininity, and I went back to the mythical story of the Garden of Eden, that if you look at the whole story of Adam and Eve, what they lost more than the fruits and the beauty of the garden, what they lost when they left the garden was the connection with God, in particular Adam, the man, because the man is first, the masculine is first, and that's God rebuked him. and I know this is myth, and I know you get it. The listeners will just have to get it, and I know they do. I mean, they're stretchers. So the disconnection happened in that original mythical story. So for me, what you're saying is so spot on, that what is needed for men is reconnection to a God, whether that God is whatever, of whatever nature, hence you're saying it's not religion per se, because that's what they had. That's what Adam, which is the masculine energy, had first. Adam had was friends with the God. I mean, if you read that story, they were friends, they were connecting, and they disconnected, and the man has never reconnected. Hence, it's men who kill, it's men who rape, it's men who are just literally messing up the world. Yeah, and there's a role that we play as the feminine, obviously, and our role is to bring you back into spirituality. I had a conversation with Gogo Joy Mohami. I don't know if you did catch it on the podcast last year. The podcast, the title was Healing the Divine Feminine, and she mentioned that the Divine Feminine's role is to bring masculinity back to spirituality. So I don't know how you know this, because when you're an engineer, You're an engineer. You're not supposed to know this. So that's quite powerful, Bongani. That's quite powerful. So how do we go about this? What if we were sitting at your feet, because we literally are, because you are literally teaching. And I am a woman who is a six-figure woman, and I'm single. And I do see the role and the value of a Black man in my life, but I don't know how to go about it. What would you advise us, me and the man, who's not earning six figures?
Look, it's that there are some simple ways to explain these things sometimes, you know, without having to be deep about it and philosophical about it, you know. There are really straightforward ways of understanding this. For example, you are a Black man and you find that life is hard for you, you know. And you also find the fact that the woman that you actually want to pursue, they're all above you, right?
Yeah.
And you don't know what to do. And whereby you would wish you can start a family with them, but you, for some reason, you cannot, because of confidence, resources, and all those things. The simple thing about it is that I wish we could make, I appreciate the Bible for one thing, because it always has examples of things. You know, I'm not going to make an example out of the Bible, but I think if what we can do more is show examples of where a man hooked up with a lady that had six figures, and then he was able to grow and able to start a business later on. Show more of those examples so that people can see that there's nothing wrong there, that development within those relationships can happen. You know, those are safe environments, you know. So if we can only be able to show those, you know, that's why I'm saying that we should show less about the negative and show more about the positive. Everything we do is promoting the negative, because we're showing where things are not working. Can we not compile examples of where things have worked, you know? Because, for example, now we're talking about the fact that it is possible for a six-figure woman to hook up with a man who's maybe a stay-at-home dad who watches the kids. Can we show how that actually works and how that is actually functional? Can more men be able to see that? Can we capture them? Can we turn that into a movie or something? Can we turn that into an essay? So those real life experiences have not been jotted down. They've not been recorded. So if only we can record more of those, then others who are skeptical about it or not sure about it, they would actually eventually be able to trust that it is a safe environment. There's nothing that I should be concerned about. I'm not going to be a laughing stock, you know? So those are the real examples that we need, you know? It's the same thing as we go into how we do our traditional ceremonies.
Yeah.
It baffles me that when the traditional ceremony is being done, let's say by someone who's been in Johannesburg for 15 years. So now he's not well-versed in those things, because he's been a GM, then he went to being an MD, then he went to being a chairman. So he's not well-versed in traditional ceremonies, the processes and all that. What everyone is concerned about is how he's going to mess up, how he's going to do things wrong.
Interesting, yeah.
So what's wrong in these things being written down so that he can know with the norm, when you're doing this ceremony, step one is this, step two is that, step three is that. In that way, we actually are going to be able to preserve how we do our traditions. So we are not preserving them because we're being so secretive about them, because we want people to fail, we want people not to know how to do that, so that we can laugh about them. You know, in the same sense, if we are going to speak about the fact that a relationship where a woman earns more is a safe environment, where is the proof? Can we have more of them? Can we have
yes, yes, yes.
can we record that? Can we promote that?
And who's supposed to promote that? Because I'm sitting here thinking that I'm thinking of the how of it, or rather, where do we start with it? If, for an example, Wong's deals dry up like completely, like he has absolutely no income, and my projects, because, you know, I'm building a little empire here, there's a school here, there's this here, there's this media little thing I'm doing here, and that's progressing. What do I do? Do I tell? What do I say? Do I run away from him? I think I'm being unfair to you. It's an unfair question, unless if you can ask it. I mean, unless if you can answer it, rather.
I think in terms of what should be done in terms of who then actually promotes it. We've got media platforms, right? But I think we've not been able to use our media platforms for our own benefit, you know? I'm at home now with my mom, and, you know, being at home with your mom means that you're gonna watch these soapies because she watches them, Generation, Scandal, and all those. Do you know that on Generations, there's actually a sex scene every day, you know?
There's and a sex scene every day. I've never watched Generations. I haven't seen Generations in years.
You watch that thing, there's a sex scene every day. And then 8:30, Uzalo plays, there's a sex scene. At 9 o'clock, it's that Muvango one, there was a sex scene. Last night, there were ladies who were naked in lingerie and all that. So, you find that we've got 2 hours of soapies. And 20 million of people watching. And the only thing that is sex for 2 hours. So where we should be actually be selling these very constructive narratives of society that can actually show people how things are and demystify things. But we are not doing that. Because for some reason, we went to a film school that is after that, whereby we are being lectured by some Americans who are telling us that sex sells, you know? And because the writer is young, they've gone through these private schools, they watch a lot of American series where there's a lot of sex, and they then write the same things, the same nonsense for Generations as well. And it gets so awkward because the grandmother is watching, the mother is watching, the father is watching.
Now, Elan.
And then all this sex going on 8 o'clock in the evening, prime time on Germany.
Prime time. Everyone is watching this thing. Yeah.
You know? So now we are not using those platforms to actually really construct how things are and how they should be. We are failing in that regard. And unfortunately, on my own as Bongani, I'm not going to be able to achieve that. So if, for example, in China, they use the media to actually advance their ideals, you know?
Yeah, they do. They do a lot.
They use the media to advance their ideals and how they do things. You know? I wanted actually to make another example. I'm sorry for taking us back here, but I think this
is one of these conversations.
We were talking about how the black man needs to step back.
Yes.
So you know Chairman Mao in China, who liberated China.
Yes.
During the revolution, what happens is that there are some smart guys who are like, hey, I went a Mao. You can't do it. Your strategies and tactics are nonsense. Man. You must take a step back. We don't want you to lead anymore. We are not going to win this war with you anymore. And you know what Chairman Mao did? Mm-mm. He stepped back. He allowed them to leave. He said, it's fine.
Then they called him back.
I'll remove myself. Then you go.
So
now that's the beauty of being spiritually inclined and being conscious, because you are so confident about yourself that you don't mind being led.
Yeah.
And you know that if they are going to make mistakes, they are going to return to you and going
yes.
to give you more power.
So, yeah, even more, so now, yes.
So now if we as Black men collectively can agree once and for all that, let's leave women to lead. If they're going to make mistakes, they're going to come back to us and we're going to say, yeah, yeah, more like a man. So I think that's for me, that would be the beauty of things, is that you mm. allow someone to take that space that they want.
Mm.
I really
agree with that, and maybe for different reasons, definitely not for the same reasons as you, because your reasons are, yeah, let them go so that they can see with you, then they'll come running back. For me, it's from the perspective of a woman that, if you think of a Black woman throughout history, throughout hundreds and hundreds of years, was at the bottom of the barrel.
Yes.
And I think you do need to feel empowered enough to be right on top, even if yeah. it means being right on top of your own guy. Mm. Hopefully, you know, one day we'll be on top of the entire thing, because, you know, in other spiritual schools of thought, the Black woman is actually the God. But that's equal level. So mm. I think we do need to feel, take up space, as Zozibini say, and own our power fully. Because only when you own something fully are you able to see the need of others. You are able to see where you lack and where that you don't actually need all of it. Yeah, that's the point. It's like being given choices. If I say to you, you can choose between this black pen and this blue pen, you are going to want the red pen and the pink pen and really fight hard for them. But if I give you all of them and I'm like, these are all yours, you'll actually pick one, maybe two at the most. So yeah, I think that needs to happen. I'm just feeling weird now that maybe it's not going to happen in our generation, but at least the conversations sort of needs to begin. And part of using this platform, my podcast, is to bring such conversations so that we can begin these things. Because I am really, like I said when I started, I'm very sympathetic towards a Black man, in as much as, I mean, it's a complex issue, in as much as I know his ills, because I'm not blindly sympathetic. You know where I come from. I come from a strong feminist background. So for me to have had a Damascus moment, if you like, and to see the whole thing for what it is. So my sympathy is real, and I really do want this thing to be better. I do, yeah.
Look, the other thing is that we sometimes miss the opportunities, you know, in terms of, for example, if we're educating the Black woman, right? And she's getting all those positions within the corporate space.
Yeah.
What the positive thing about it actually is that the Black man is actually getting an opportunity to be outside of the corporate space and to take up opportunities in the entrepreneurial space.
Yeah.
So then it eventually complements each other, you know? Because then if you're going to go out and you build business, then you're still going to meet that same Black woman to run and manage the show.
Yeah.
So by weird coincidence, that's why I'm saying that it's right that the Black woman should be put there, that she gets the job, she gets educated, because at the end of the day, your place should be outside creating the jobs, you know, taking up those opportunities in business. So that's where you're supposed to be. So yes, step back and don't moan about how she's been giving all these opportunities. You rather focus then on how you can then exploit the business opportunities outside that the others now are coming in their millions to come and exploit, you know?
Yeah. So nearly cut you as I normally do.
Because you're too busy when sharpening up your CV. No, now others are taking up those business opportunities.
You're busy in some power struggle of some sort.
So I think the bigger message is man up, you know, but man up by leaving her to do what she does. Let her be educated, then man up and go establish your business and protect your turf, you know. Are you not protecting your turf? If there's one thing I'm proud of is the fact that I know that there's not a single person whose job I've taken at the job place, because I feel that it's not my place to compete with others for a job. You know, I should be outside and creating these jobs. Not being there in the queue and also complaining about not having jobs. No, that's not where we should be. We should be outside and creating the jobs. So by again, yeah, we also need the office.
One last thing, because I see we've gone past an hour and we won't have enough time for Black History Month, but I just want to take you back to what you said earlier, that no, men are not supposed to be emotional. We don't need them to be emotional. What do you mean by that, Bongani? Because, you know, we want a guy who is able to express an emotion. And I am playing devil's advocate. I hope you know that. But tell me your side. Tell me why you say that.
It's one thing to be emotional. It's another thing to be sympathetic, you know? Those are the two things. I think what you actually really need is a sympathetic man, not an emotional one.
A kind man. Yes. You know, someone who's kind, who's I nearly said woke, but yeah, perhaps woke. Someone who can read the room. Can you read the room that something is off? Here acting ngaboni. Yeah, you know, can you ask me, is everything okay?
Exactly.
So that's what you mean. Not the other emotional, because emotional is what's happening now, this violence. That's emotional men who are violent and beating people up. That's it. Those are the emotions. There's no logic there.
We don't need that. We don't need that. Yeah. We need something that is more structured, something that is more functional, you know? And I'm saying that I think it's high time that we get to connect with our spiritual element within us, you know?
No, definitely. You
know, so many of us dismiss the other realms in this world. It's high time that we don't dismiss that, you know? I think if we would have a poll, then it would show that less men are religious and even lesser men do consult with our spiritual guides, you know, and we need to recognize that that's where we need to be at, you know. The more we become more entrenched and aligned with our spiritual beings, then the better for society as a whole.
I'm looking at the time. It's 1 hour 20 minutes and your people in your office are making so much noise. I hope we'll be able to sort of clean it up when we edit. If it's not cleanable, I'm blaming you right now. Any words on any words on Black History Month? A lot of people don't know it. Do you know its origins? Why should we recognize it and all that? I mean, it is Black History Month after all. Do you have any words to share with the listeners about this important month?
I think it started off in the 1920s. After Dr. Woods got his degree and he was able to teach, and he noticed that from the content that was there, it was not representative of where Black Americans were coming from. And he was always acknowledging what white America has done and what white America has achieved. So mm-hmm. he basically felt that there are things that African Americans have achieved that should also be noted, you know. What I find to be really remarkable in that whole process of where he started the Negro History Week is the fact that he didn't do it alone, actually. It was something that he drove, but together with the students. You know? Now, if there's one thing that I would want to take out of that is that important element of students. And we all know that chances are it's the students who even implanted the idea in him, you know?
Yeah, because that's how it works. That's how it works. Mm, it's always the youth.
The youth that implanted that idea in him in terms of pressing him is to say, but couldn't we also be studying this? And then him as the teacher, obviously, would take the credit as the leader, as someone who actually initiates things. But I think it shows very well that the youth has always been instrumental in terms of obtaining revolutionary change and making history.
Yeah, no, so, throughout history, throughout time, it's always been the youth. I mean, you can go biblical, you can go other cultures. You always find that it's the young people. Even us here, so, June 16, yeah.
So that the thing is, it's how it's set up currently now, it's all about the achievements and it's all about what African Americans has done, you know, they have achieved, the famous ones, you know. So it's all about the landmark events that has been recorded.
Okay.
So it has less to do with how they can actually come to define who they are, actually, you know.
Interesting.
So now you see the fact that it just stops at the fact that this is what some African Americans have achieved. Yes, can you take note of the fact that Obama was the first president and all those things?
And Rosa Parks was the one who refused to get off the bus. Martin Luther King, Malcolm X. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then going forward, there's no call to action. Is there a call to? I mean, I know I'm asking you these questions as if you are American. What's the call to action? Yes, we have Black Lives Matter, which, in my opinion, is hijacked by other sources. What's the call to action?
There's no real fundamental call to action, but I think that the biggest thing they have achieved now is to have it adopted in most schools across America.
That was
a call to action, but that was a victory, meaning that students are obliged now to learn something about African Americans, you know. Of which it has been something that's been in the news, whereby some parents are saying, well, for that particular month of February, my child is not going to go to school.
And slavery, let's all forget about it. Let's just move on. Hey, white people, let's just move on.
So there's no particular call to action, you know? There's none of that. But I think if it has no ideology behind it, then it's always going to be something of a festival, something of a celebration.
I see
that can be achieved from that if it's only about marking that. But if there's an ideology behind it in terms of how then do we define ourselves, now you see that's a call to action, because we are these people now. We have lost all those years and all that history. But now how do we create this current history that will say this is who we are? For example, if someone asks you, what is an African American? It's a Black person staying in America. Now, there's no value in that. You know? There's no value in that. So if it can go to a point whereby they organize themselves and say, look, let's put value into who we are, you know?
Hey, there's your call again, Bongani.
Okay.
I don't know why you're getting calls on a landline in 2021. I mean, in fact, why? What's next to your phone? Is the FX machine right there and a tape recorder and a DVD?
There's probably. There's a big printer as well.
It's an office. Got to go government. Okay. Look, this has been great. You are going to return as usual, because I love our conversations. In fact, you must be a regular, so we can just bounce ideas off each other. But I've loved this. I think it's enriching, and it is thought provoking, and it is controversial in its own way. So I just can't wait to hear what the listeners say about it. So from me, I thank you so much for your time.
Okay, not a problem. Thanks a lot, Demo. And we'll talk more, but I think that there are a few things that we've not even touched on, but there will be time again when we speak about that.
Okay, maybe we can do a part two, like soon, probably before the end of March, we can return. Let's see how the listeners are responding to this, because I have a feeling they'll respond very well. And then you can come back, because these have to happen. These conversations have to happen. We have a distorted view of each other, and we're living in a changed world. And it can't be that other nations value family so much till now we are just gallivanting on our own. And not building. So, and we think we'll get our land back. It will never work. And also, I wanted to say, well, maybe that wasn't goodbye. I wanted to say to you earlier that my daughter is 28. She finished matric in 2010. And she says almost half of the white students that she went to school with in matric are married with kids, almost all of them, maybe half. And Bona, they are single. So something is off. And I'm not saying that, you know, we want to be traditional and backwards, but there's something that we are not seeing that creating a family is doing for other nations. That's where I'm at. Yeah, because I mean, if a child who was born 92 has... Yeah, he sees that, and people are getting married, and they're building, their lives are moving forward. We are missing something. Something is off.
We are missing something.
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, bye, Bongani. Let me say goodbye and stop the recording.
Take care.
Okay, bye.
Yeah, no, this is one of those conversations that will just have to be ongoing. We'll just have to go there and challenge everything that we think we know, you know? We need to challenge everything about how we are approaching our relationships, what we term love, romance, and also just to get the black man to really just reconnect with himself, with his higher self, and with a spiritual identity of some sort, and for his own sake, not for other sakes, you know, because we have this whole other narrative about black men consulting with healers or sangomas or ancestors just so that they can amass wealth and get girls and, you know, for control and power, not for those reasons. But so that they know that there's a higher power. Their lives are guided by something bigger than them. You know, the whole disillusionment of them and churches. Now, I do understand it. I mean, I do understand why churches are full of women and men are slowly leaving. I grew up in a family, or rather in a household, where my mom went to church and my dad couldn't bother. You know, so I know spiritual disconnection firsthand, and I saw it with my own dad. So if you take nothing out of this conversation, and if you're a male listening to this, I think what you want to take is you need to honestly just find a spiritual base. Find out, go back to God, and I say God loosely. Go back to God, reconnect with your ancestor, reconnect with a spiritual body. And then you will know who you are. Because right now, it's bad. So we will obviously have part 3 and part 4 and part 5. Maybe not only with Bongani. maybe on as a panel or whatever. Let's just see how this is going. But for now, once again, apologies for the audio, but I just felt it was too important a conversation to postpone for another day. I hope it was audible, and I hope you took something out of it. Until next week, when I bring you another guest of the Stretch Podcast, love and green lights to you.
Thank you, and see you again next week for another episode of the Stretch Podcast.